You are listening to the seventh installment of IEEE Talks Software Process, where experts interview experts. I'm Scott Roy Smith, your host here at the IEEE Computer Society Studios in gorgeous Southern California. If you've listened to previous episodes, you've heard me warn that this podcast is only for software professionals who need mission-critical, proven, and in-depth implementation of software quality, measurement, risk management, and Lean Six Sigma. If you are looking for casual listening, this is not it. The content of this podcast is reviewed by peers for accuracy, so you can count on results. Just add water and apply according to directions. So if you're ready, let's dig in. Today, one of our experts is John Harris. John is an independent consultant and a registered professional engineer with more than 36 years of experience. He is an internationally recognized authority on systems engineering and software engineering standards for safety-related computer systems, including the regulatory licensing of such systems. Welcome to the call, John.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Scott.
John Harris will be interviewed by John W. Walls, co-author in the book series from IEEE Computer Society, Practical Support Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. He's returning from previous episodes. John, welcome to the call, and please take it away.
Well, thank you, Scott. Well, John, welcome aboard. I understand you'll be talking about using IEEE standards to develop safety-critical software, and I know software is always part of a system, so can you explain what is meant by safety-critical systems?
Well, John, safety-critical systems are defined as those systems whose failure could result in loss of life, significant property damage, or damage to the environment. There are many well-known examples in application areas such as medical devices, aircraft flight control, weapons, and nuclear systems. Many modern information systems are becoming safety critical in a general sense because financial loss and even loss of life can result from their failure. In addition, individual systems are increasingly being integrated into systems of systems, raising an important concern among practicing safety engineers, and that is how to deal with emergent safety hazards arising from the interaction among the systems comprising the systems of systems. In addition, safety-critical systems may necessarily be security-critical systems, but not vice versa. Design of safety and secure software involves common aspects like risk analysis and the consideration of safety and security aspects at all stages of the system and software design cycle.
Okay, so what's the safety problem with software?
Software is just a portion of a system. Other portions of that system include computer hardware, other devices, and people. System requirements are allocated to these portions, hardware, software, and people during system design. Software itself does not pose a hazard. It is only safety critical if it controls a physical source of energy. Hence, software alone is not a safety issue. It is only an issue in the context of this larger system. Software safety must begin with the larger system and must be considered in the context of its associated hardware environment and operators. The discipline of system safety is a multidisciplinary activity that uses systems theory and systems engineering approaches to prevent foreseeable accidents and to minimize the result of unforeseen ones. The discipline of software safety is part of system safety. Software safety is defined as the systematic approach to identifying, analyzing, and tracking software mitigation and control of hazards and hazardous functions to ensure safer software operation within a system. System safety engineers and software safety engineers must work together to treat safety in an integrated manner during development of safety-critical systems. Some well-known accidents involving software where safety and financial loss occurred are the $125 million Mars Climate Orbiter, which was assumed lost by officials at NASA. The Mars Climate Orbiter crash occurred because the wrong system of units was used in part of the ground-based software. Second, in a series of accidents involving a computerized radiation therapy machine, 6 patients were overexposed and 3 died. The control system failed to perform its intended safety function because of multiple complex problems associated with the software programs. Three, the Denver Airport baggage handling system was so complex, involving 300 computers, that the development overrun prevented the airport from opening on time. Fixing the incredibly buggy system required an additional 50% of the original budget, nearly $200 million. The problems with the system included problems of system acquisition, volatile requirements, management, and hardware design. The system as a whole, and not just the software, failed to operate correctly. The 2005 FBI virtual case file custom software system designed to automate the Bureau's paper-based environment was delivered at a cost of $170 million with so many errors that it was scrapped in 2006. Poorly defined requirements, overly ambitious schedule, and the lack of good plans were identified as factors. It was planned to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more to fix this.
Well, those were some big disasters. So how does one go about to achieve safety?
ISO Guide 51 defines safety as freedom from unacceptable risk. Therefore, safety is achieved by reducing risk to a tolerable level through an iterative process of risk assessment and risk reduction. There can be no absolute safety, as some risk will always remain. The process of risk assessment and reduction is an inherent part of hazards analysis, which is central to the development of safety-critical systems. The process provides key input required to prepare a safety case. A safety case is the vehicle used to present a clear, comprehensive, and defensible argument that a system, including software, is acceptably safe to operate in a particular context, and it is supported by calculations and procedures. The safety case enables suppliers to make assurance claims about the safety of their systems, products, or services to the procurement stakeholders and any regulatory stakeholders. It includes the claims in which the confidence is needed for stakeholder decision-making, the arguments for these claims, the evidence that supports the arguments, and the uncertainties regarding these claims. The approach necessarily encompasses the entire lifecycle of the system and affects nearly every system and software lifecycle process of ISO IEC 15288 and ISO IEC 12207. The success of a safety case depends not just on its contents and characteristics as a standalone vehicle, but also on the status of the organizational safety culture of which it is a part.
That hazard analysis sounds just similar to a requirements analysis. Can you go into more detail on what is hazardous analysis?
Hazards analysis is the heart of any development program involving safety. Hazards analysis and control is a continuous iterative process throughout system and software development and implementation, which consists of techniques and methods for risk assessment to identify each hazard or potential source of harm, analyze the risks associated with a particular hazard, reduce risks that are deemed to be intolerable to a tolerable level, and tolerable risk is judged in comparison with similar products, processes, or services. The necessary risk reductions at the system level form the system safety design requirements or the design constraints.
So how is hazard analysis affected by the development lifecycle?
Hazard analysis is used to develop system and software design requirements and constraints, validate requirements, design for safety at all stages of system and software development, plan software testing, subsystem testing and integration, and system testing and validation, aid management planning throughout system and software development, prepare operational procedures and instructions during system use. Hazard identification begins with preliminary hazard analysis as early as the conceptual development of the system. As soon as the design begins, hazards can begin being controlled. During development, it is possible to verify that hazards have in fact been controlled by the design measures already imposed. It is important to note that system safety doesn't end with the delivery of the product. Any changes to the system in use must be analyzed for their potential impact on safety. Feedback must be collected from operational use to identify any hazards not detected and controlled in earlier steps. Operational feedback also provides lessons learned for future projects.
So the hazard identification begins with this preliminary hazard analysis. Can you go into more detail about that?
Preliminary hazard analysis is a high-level exercise intended to identify, system-level safety issues during the initial requirements analysis phase of a project. It focuses on system-level hazards that may be produced by the overall system. Its main objective is to identify system hazards as early as practical and either eliminate or control them to acceptable levels. Hazards are removed by selecting alternative technologies or materials. Risk is controlled via the system's technology by a reduction in the severity of harm and/or the probability of the hazard occurring. In a preliminary hazard analysis, one formulates a preliminary list of hazards and generic hazardous situations by considering characteristics such as materials used or produced, equipment employed, operating environment, interfaces among system components, and other. Historical safety experience, lessons learned, trouble reports, incident and accident files can help in hazards identification. Many industries have published lists, checklists, standards, and codes of practice that may guide hazard list development. The preliminary hazards list is used to establish the hazards log, which documents all hazards identified during system and software development. The hazards log is a central part of a safety information system, which is required when developing safety-related systems, including software. A hazard log is a living document which is established to document and track hazards and their controls, and to provide an auditable trail of hazard resolution from their initial identification to resolution. This can be a centralized file, computer database, or logbook. The log is an essential source of input to a safety case.
Okay, so we've got the preliminary hazard analysis done. So what is the system hazards analysis?
System hazard analysis builds on preliminary hazard analysis as a foundation. It considers the system as a whole and identifies how system operation, interfaces, and interactions between subsystems and between the system and operators and component failures could contribute to system hazards. System hazard analysis validates and refines the design constraints identified during preliminary hazard analysis. Through system hazards analysis, safety design constraints are traced to individual components based on the functional decomposition and allocation. Hazard causal analysis is used to refine the high-level safety constraints into more detailed constraints. This process requires a model of the system, even if that model is just in the head of the analyst. Causal analysis almost always involves some type of search through the system design model for states or conditions that could lead to system hazards. System hazard analysis considers possible hardware and software hazardous events and failures that could create a hazard or increase risk, degradation in the safety of a subsystem or the total system, design changes that affect the subsystems, effects of reasonable human errors, and the effects of the implementation of the subsystem or systems. At this level, software is treated as a subsystem, and software safety engineers may need to work closely with system safety engineers on identifying system hazards related to software subsystems.
Okay, so after the high-level system hazardous analysis is finished, what is the subsystem and software hazard analysis?
A subsystem hazards analysis is performed to verify subsystem compliance with allocated system safety requirements, identify previously unknown hazards resulting from functional relationship between the components and equipment comprising each subsystem, and to recommend actions necessary to eliminate identified hazards or control their associated risk to acceptable levels. Factors to consider are performance failures, functional failures, timing errors, design errors or defects, or inadvertent functioning. The human element is considered a component that receives inputs and initiates outputs within a subsystem. Software hazard analysis is a form of subsystem hazard analysis. It validates that specified software black box behavior satisfies system safety design constraints and design criteria. This analysis must be performed on all software in the system, including COTS. Like system hazards analysis, software hazards analysis requires a model of the component's behavior. Software is just too complex to do analysis entirely in one's head. Formal models are useful, but they need to be readable and usable without graduate-level training in discrete math. Mathematical proofs can be developed based on formal systems, but they must be understandable by application experts, and frequently the proofs are more complex and error-prone than the systems they describe. State machines make a good model for describing and analyzing digital systems and software. State machines have a mathematical basis so that they can be analyzed, and they have a graphical notation which can be easily understandable. Some analyses can be automated, and tools can help analysts search the model. The type of model chosen may depend on regulatory requirements.
Okay, so the hazardous analysis is doing some work with models. So what other techniques are available to support this hazard analysis?
There are many techniques to support hazard analysis. Some of the main ones are fault tree analysis, failure mode and effect analysis, event tree analysis, common cause failure analysis, and cause consequence analysis. Fault tree analysis and failure mode and effect analysis are the most commonly used, and they are also applicable to software. A number of other methods are variation on these two commonly used methods. Usually a combination of techniques is necessary to perform adequate and sufficient hazards analysis. There are a number of industrially available software tools available for managing specific techniques.
Okay, well, can you go into more detail on fault tree analysis?
Fault tree analysis is a top-down approach to identifying the causes of hazards. Fault tree analysis provides a systematic and flexible approach to analysis of a variety of factors, including human interactions. It is used to provide an estimate of fault probabilities and to identify single fault and common mode faults that result in hazardous situations. The pictorial representation leads to an easy understanding of the system software behavior and the factors included, but as the trees become large, processing of fault trees requires computer support tools. Fault tree analysis starts from a postulated undesired consequence, also called a top event. In a deductive manner, starting with the top event, the possible causes of fault modes of the next lower functional system level causing the undesired consequences are identified. This is performed in a stepwise manner through successively lower levels until the desired system level is reached, which is usually either the component fault mode or the lowest level at which risk control measures can be applied. System fault trees are helpful in identifying potentially hazardous software behavior, which could be a top event for software fault tree analysis. When fault trees are applied to software, qualitative fault trees may have some use, but not quantitative ones. Quantitative fault trees depend on the probability of a component failure. With software, there is no way to derive this number. A benefit of software fault tree analysis is that it applies the reasoning process of formal methods without the mathematical complication of the proofs. The underlying theory is based on proof by contradiction. Software fault tree analysis is only practical for relatively small pieces of software.
Okay, besides fault tree analysis, you mentioned failure mode and effect analysis. Can you go into that in more detail?
Failure mode and effect analysis is a bottom-up component view of potential failures and is typically organized in a table. It is a technique by which the consequences of an individual fault mode are systematically identified and evaluated. It is an inductive technique using the question, what happens if? Components are analyzed one at a time, thus generally looking at a single fault condition. This is done in a bottom-up mode following the procedure to the next higher functional system level. System failure mode and effect analysis consider failure of a component's design, failures in the manufacturing and assembling of components, and the use or misuse of the product by the end user. Software failure mode and effect analysis is performed to identify design deficiencies in software. An advantage is that software failure mode and effect analysis can be merged into a system failure mode and effect analysis, and the output from a software failure mode and effect analysis can be used as an input to a software fault tree analysis.
Okay, for software developers, the software fault tree and the failure mode and effect analysis are going to be helpful. So how does one go about planning for software safety development?
Safety planning must consider all of the software safety tasks. A short list of safety tasks include tracing identified system hazards and system safety design constraints through software design to the code and the test cases, translating identified software-related hazards and system safety design constraints into requirements and constraints on software behavior, designing software and the human-machine interface to eliminate or control hazards and documenting design decisions, performing software safety testing, performing special safety analysis on a human-computer interaction and the interfaces between critical and non-critical software, analyzing all test and analysis results and subsequent changes for their effect on safety. IEEE Standard 1228 for software safety plans can be used to plan software development for software with safety implications. As software safety is part of system safety, the software safety plan must dovetail with the system safety plan. Software safety design may necessarily have additional design constraints that need to be factored into planning, like regulatory or sector-specific software standards, the type of model to be used for analyzing software behavior, the required use of a restricted subset of a language's capability, isolation of safety critical code from non-safety critical code, use or design of a simple kernel or operating system, a use of defensive programming guidelines, all of which may be necessary to the development of a successful safety case.
Okay, that's the software safety development part. So how does one test software for safety?
Testing for safety starts from system safety design constraints. The goal is to show that software will not do anything that will lead to violating the constraints. At a minimum, hazardous outputs must be tested for. The effectiveness of any specific safety design feature must be tested. The test must focus on what the software will do that it is not supposed to do. That is much more difficult than just verifying that the software performs a particular function. Like any testing, the test should be specified early in the development cycle and evolve as the design and hazards analysis evolves. Safety testing needs to address critical functions and special protection features for hazardous behavior, boundary conditions, incorrect and unexpected inputs, input sequences and timing, reaction of the software to system faults and failures, go-no-go and fail-safe modes, and the operator interface. The role of the software safety engineer is to review the test plans and recommend tests based on hazard analysis, safety standards, checklists, previous accidents and incidents, and interface analysis. The software safety engineer also should review test results for any safety-related problems that were missed in analysis or other testing, and monitor tests for unexpected failure modes and hazardous states.
Well, this sounds difficult. So what are the limitations of software safety testing?
There is a limit to the confidence that can be acquired through dynamic analysis. Demonstrating that software will not do something under any conditions is a much more difficult task than demonstrating that a particular function works as intended. Accidents occur only infrequently and usually in ways not anticipated by the designer or tester. Lastly, testing doesn't find requirements errors which become the cause of most accidents. There are also limits to static analysis. Tests are needed to verify the accuracy of the model to the constructed system, the satisfaction of the assumptions underlying the mathematical techniques, and things not covered by static analysis, such as performance. Test designers can use the result of static analysis as a guide to test planning. As stated earlier, formal verification will not make complex systems simple either. Formal proofs developed as part of formal verification may be larger than the program being verified. Often the formal verification is very difficult to construct and hence likely to contain errors. Software fault tree analysis can be used as an informal code analysis technique that applies the reasoning process of formal methods without the mathematical complication of the proofs.
Okay, so what are the important international and IEEE standards to be considered when developing safety-critical systems?
Developing safety-critical systems is not a trivial undertaking. Many standards may need to be consulted and applied during the development process. As stated earlier, the safety case approach affects nearly every lifecycle process of ISO IEC 15288 on system lifecycle processes and ISO IEC 12207 software lifecycle processes. These standards require specifying safety requirements in the requirements definition processes and the tracking of these requirements throughout the lifecycle. IEEE Standard 1228 for software safety plans will be consulted to plan the development project that has safety implications. Users, in addition, will require risk management and measurement processes. Two international standards, ISO IEC 16085 on risk management and ISO-IEC 15939 on system and software measurement process, are useful in this regard. Users may need to consider the multi-part standard IEC 61508 functional safety of electrical, electronic, programmable electronic safety systems. Additional standards provide guidance for techniques to support hazards analysis, such as IEC 60812 for fault failure mode and effects analysis, IEC 61025 for fault tree analysis, and IEC 61882 for hazard and operability studies.
Well, John, earlier you mentioned some software disasters in industries such as aerospace and medical devices. How do the sector-specific standards relate to safety?
Specific industry sectors have developed their own software safety standards to be used. Some may be mandated by a regulatory body and either will take precedence over generic international standards or will still need to be applied in conjunction with other standards. Some sector-specific standards include but are not limited to IEC 60880 software for computers and the safety systems of nuclear power stations, IEC 62304 for medical device software, RTCA DO-178B, software considerations in airborne systems, SAE AS9006, aerospace requirements for software, ISO 26262, discussing road vehicles' functional safety, and that is based on 61508. Also of note is ANSI UL 1998, Standard for Software and Programmable Components. Although not sector-specific, it is intended to be used for the evaluation of products that rely on software and microelectronics to perform safety-related functions in conjunction with other application-specific standards.
Okay, so besides using best process practices and standards, I assume developers must have some appropriate training and experiences. So what are the special professional responsibilities needed for developers of safety-critical software?
People developing safety-critical software systems should be adequately trained in basic software development, and they should understand their limitations. A software safety engineer should have good knowledge of both hardware and software. This engineer needs the ability to communicate with and influence system engineers, software engineers, and hardware engineers. A software safety engineer is responsible for software safety analysis and for software inputs to system safety analysis and the safety case. He/she must participate in design reviews and sit in the configuration control board. The software safety engineer establishes and oversees the audit trails for identified software hazards. The software safety engineer should also participate in the integration tests and other activities. Software developers, as responsible professionals, have responsibility for minimizing the risk of failure and ensuring public safety and security. Certification of software safety engineers is becoming an increasingly important consideration in the development of safety-critical systems.
Thank you, John. Besides standards, what other resources are available from IEEE Computer Society?
The IEEE Computer Society has an extensive set of products, such as podcasts like this one, webcasts, tutorials, and books that can provide additional implementation support. This is in addition to the conference and periodic offerings and other published IEEE standards.
Well, that was quite informative, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Harris and John W. Walls, for your advice on using IEEE standards to develop safety-critical software. You've mentioned some subjects that are covered in depth in a book that I'd like to point out to our listeners. It is listed in the show notes on the website, but I'll mention it here as well. It's called Practical Support for ISO 9001 Software Project Documentation Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards. It is available on computer.org and Wiley.com. Well, that wraps it up for this installment. Thank you for listening to IEEE Talk Software Process. We would like to hear from you. Please email podcasts@computer.org to give us your comments and feedback, or visit us at computer.org/podcasts. Until next time, this is Scott Roy Smith saying, may your advancement be manifest.